If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome everyone to the last May past birthday month CU podcast, Tuesday, May 28th, 2019.
It's just the last CU podcast. We haven't told anyone yet.
Ever?
Ever, yep.
Man.
This is it.
We're listening to the internet. Alongside Ian Ferguson, I'm Pat Constry. We'll be talking about lots of fun stuff. The Playdate Portable. The next Call of Duty game, we keeping that one on the roster or no?
No.
That one's gone?
That one's gone.
Okay.
It's out.
No, okay, we'll go over it in the intro. Gaming disorder now recognized, according to the World Health Organization, as an illness. Undumped Famicom game sales for almost 14,000. The State of Retro Game Collecting 2019 update and more. Tells from the Game Store, your Q&A. Ian, how was your Memorial Day barbecue, the one I wasn't at?
Good. Hey, you had the opportunity to be there.
Well, it was just a half-hearted. Come by for a beer later.
You told me you had already eaten. You couldn't. You were working
three.
For 6 hours. I told you the day before that you were supposed to come over.
I have a backyard at Castle Country that people can come over. Maybe a mutual friend named Thomas that you didn't let me know was coming down. We could have hung out, but that's all right. Keep Thomas to yourself.
You were invited.
What did
you
cook?
I don't know what more
what
you want
you
me
cook?
To do besides throw
what?
You over my shoulder and take you to my house.
What did you cook, Ian?
Carne asada that I used for quesadillas.
Okay.
And then Lincoln did burgers, and I did grilled corn on the cob.
Okay, I would have enjoyed that.
Yes, you would have. That's why you were invited.
Did you use my Bloodsport shirt to start the fire? Like, just light it up and
no.
put it to light the charcoal?
No, what I did use it for was the smoke signals, because apparently you need 5 invites to come over.
It's not 5, you know. I like Thomas. If I know Thomas was coming, I would have showed up and said hi. That's all right. Speaking of fire.
Fire?
A certain Super Nintendo guidebook's available at ultimatesnes.com. You can pre-order it, or you can pre-order the third print of the NES one, which is currently out of print. Don't pay the scalpers $100 like last time. Remember last time that person got paid $100? For my book on eBay? Wait, it'll be back out in the summer. Wait for it. It'll be worth the wait, the third print run.
What does your book have to do with fire?
I don't know. I just had to work it in.
Oh.
People are like, Pat, you mention your book every video. No, every podcast I mention every video. Did you watch AEW All Elite Wrestling, the first event, Double or Nothing?
I did not. But I heard that the Dusty Cody match was good. That was basically the takeaway I got from the people I talked to.
So AEW or some wrestling, they're the upstart American wrestling organization started by really the Elite. The Young Bucks, Cody Rhodes,
the Young Bucks,
Adam Page.
As you were, but actually the tag team as well.
Yes, and then my pal Kenny Omega. They all their contracts with New Japan were up after January. They're always up after January after Wrestle Kingdom. And then they said, you know what? We're going to start our own wrestling thing. We're going to do it in the U.S. We have the knowledge. They probably built their knowledge, obviously, over the past few years being in Cody's only been there for like a year and a half at New Japan. They did their one-off pay-per-view with Ring of Honor last year when those guys, mm-hmm. independent event, and that did very well. People said, oh, that's not going to do well. It sold out.
Yeah.
This sold out almost instantly as well.
So this was
Vegas.
The second one, right?
First for All Elite, but they did,
right.
they
oh,
did
they,
All
they
In.
Just did all
In was just a generic
yeah, right.
one.
Okay, that's
using,
what I was trying to remember.
Using talent from
yeah,
all
yeah.
over. They had like
that's
a little
right.
bit of New Japan, I think. They had Ring of Honor guys. They had indie guys. But this is their new Fed. This right. is like we have people signing long-term contracts. Jericho is signed to a long-term contract. Other people are signed to long-term contracts. Like,
how old is Jericho now?
48.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
So yeah, basically he can still go. He can still wrestle well. His psychology is brilliant. So I saw bits and pieces. I did not see all of it. From the review I saw was really good. Ian said he saw mixed reviews here and there. People obviously wanted to succeed because WWE right now is trash. That's the nicest way I can put it.
Well, I feel like there's almost, it's hard for me to read the opinions I've seen and feel like there's anyone who's just trying to enjoy it for what it is.
It's tough to be objective.
It feels like everyone who watched it either has the agenda already in them that this is going to be amazing or this is going to be trash.
Sure.
I honestly haven't read anything that sounds like a truly honest review of it. It's all, we're going to shit on everything but the Dusty match, or we're going to say everything was great.
Well, I heard the Omega Jericho match was pretty good. Dusty. Was pretty good. Yeah, Dusty. Rest in peace, Dusty. God, that really hit me hard. That the Jericho main event match against Kenny Omega was to decide the number one contender along with the Battle Royale.
Battle Royale did that as well, right?
Yeah, and that was Adam Page, who's grown by leaps and bounds the past couple of years. Like, he's a really, really good wrestler. So that'll decide, I guess it'll be Jericho versus Adam Page in the next event in a month. So basically, they have backing. AEW is going to be on TNT in the fall, weekly wrestling show, which is pretty big news. And TNT was like pushing it. They pushed this event on their Twitter. They were promoting this. So they're like all in with this.
When was the last time we had a new wrestling show?
Whenever TNA came on.
Yeah, because there was Lucha Underground, but I heard Lucha Underground played out more like a TV show.
That's like a TV show season. Okay. It doesn't count. That's not like a weekly sort of thing, you know, 52 weeks a year.
Gotcha.
So that would be whenever TNA went off. Remember, TNA had their weekly $10 pay-per-views, and they started in like 2000, whatever it was, 2003 or 4.
And then weekly $10 pay-per-views?
Yeah, that's how TNA started. Remember when it was NWA TNA? That was 2002, I believe, or 2003?
Oh, my God, yeah.
There were $10 weekly pay-per-views. And then they went to a TV, I think, about a year or so after that, less than a year. So, like, 2004, 2005. But TNA has fallen so off the radar that I don't even track it.
I didn't think it was even happening still.
It's happening, I think. But here's the deal. WWE is in bad shape. Not financially, because they have, you know, Saudi blood money, and they do their tours around the U.S., and they have their stock is up. But their ratings, TV ratings, are down 20%, I think, year over year. In the past year, and I've officially stopped watching. Every 5 or 6 years or so, I go off of wrestling. This is the cycle. After WrestleMania, I'm off. I have zero interest now in WWE. I just don't.
I've been off for I think 3 years again now, and the thing is I actually want to watch wrestling, but I can't bring myself to watch the WWE shit.
It's just bland. There's no direction, and from all reports is that it's because of Vince McMahon changing things and doing whatever he wants.
Well, that's been the story for forever. Ever.
But now he's become older and older. He's 73. He's become more out of touch with things. So now, like, when they have Brock win the Money in the Bank, and people are like, you got to be fucking kidding. We're done with this Brock shit. He's been the face of the company the last 3-4 years along with Reigns, and this is what happens. There's no big stars anymore because it's just been Reigns and Brock and no one else. And now this is why it's suffering, and that you haven't used talent properly, and people get pissed and they leave. Sasha Banks is sitting on the sidelines. She wants out. Luke Harper wants out. They won't let him out of his contract. You know, it's just a bad situation with some of these guys. Dean Ambrose wanted out. He hates it. And now he's Jon Moxley, his original persona in AEW. And that was huge. That was a huge coup. A huge coup. Because the crowd went nuts. It got major.
Was he in the, I knew he appeared, but was he in
He appeared
the...
at the end, and he beat up Jericho. He beat up Omega. He DDT Jericho and started a feud with Omega. He took out Omega. And JR was going nuts like it was like Raw 99. So like, oh my God, oh, get the EMT. Because he threw Omega off of these awesome, they had these awesome casino chips, like these giant ones on the side of the set. The set was great. The production sounds like it went pretty well for this first event. And he threw Omega off of like the 15-foot thing. And you hear JR go, oh my God, get the EMT. You know, so I'm excited just because you need an alternative. This is airing more on the side of pro wrestling versus sports entertainment versus WWE, where it's sports entertainment 80% and then a little bit of wrestling. The first match on Raw last night, I read the reports, didn't start until 47 minutes in. The first match on Raw, 47 minutes in. On a wrestling show.
How long is Raw?
3 hours. So I think SmackDown's going to turn it 3 hours as well. And on a three-hour Raw, you'll be lucky if you get 5 matches. In 3 hours. You get 5 matches usually.
I remember over the 3 days hours. Of 3 hour Nitros where they were just, the undercard was just packed.
Yeah, the undercard, on a 3 hour Nitro, you got like 10 to 12 matches.
Yeah.
You did. It's like, okay, let's roll them out. Come on.
I mean, towards the end, it got bad with the Russo stuff. Yeah, it changed, you know, more to be like what it is now. But for the first, for the first few years of WCW.
Until like 98.
Heightened 99. Popularity.
Yeah.
I would say until 99. Yeah. You, early I mean, 99. Even as it started to change, you still got undercard matches. You still got
good lucha matches. You got cruiserweight matches. You got tag matches. And WWE has spit all over their tag division the past years. They just spit on it. They don't give a shit about tag match. And tag wrestling is very important because it's an art in itself, but it's a good way to use talent that can't fit into the normal, you know, grind of the one-on-one matches.
I love tag wrestling, but you can't just throw people together in a team with nothing and call them a team, which is what WWE often does. There was a small period there with NXT, especially, where they really were. It seemed like they were trying to build up
tag teams.
And if they weren't like standalone tag teams, they would at least work people together often enough so that there was chemistry, a story.
Yeah.
I really hate it when it's like, and this tag team match is random X and random Y versus, you know, W and Z. Give them a team name. Give me a reason to fight for them as a team.
Yeah. So for all these reasons, plus I think this is going to, they're going to let wrestlers be themselves. And that's something WWE has not done.
Right.
They don't do that. They don't let guys, okay, we know, what are you good at? Go do that. That's one of the reasons Dean Ambrose famously was fed up and they left. They destroyed, his heel turn was terrible in the fall. And he was fed up, and he doesn't feel like he can be himself and be a little bit wild, go off a little bit, and that's what's going to happen, I think, in AEW. They're going to trust the talent to lead the way, and that's what Vince has not done, and that's why people are not watching more, and that's why I'm not watching. I don't even DVR it anymore. I just don't. It went from me DVRing and sort of fast forward to most. Now that I don't need to DVR it, I'm just not interested.
I tuned into WrestleMania as like the first event I had watched in probably a year.
It was a chore.
Last WrestleMania. Chore. And I was like, I don't need to do this.
It was a chore.
Yeah, it was.
WrestleMania was a chore.
I'm good.
But and plus these are young, hungry guys. And they have heavy money backing. This is not going to go out of business before the TBD deal. They got people signed long term. And competition is good for everyone. Because I'm not saying that they're going to take over WWE. They're not. They're going to take a market share from them potentially, and then the shareholders will say, what's going on? We have to change things. And Vince, get the fuck out of the way and let Triple H run it.
Yeah.
Be better. Because Triple H is running NXT. Supposedly that's the crown jewel of WWE right now. Those guys come up, though, to the main roster and don't do shit. EC3, Ian. EC3, a world-class talent, is relegated to backstage segments. Since he's come up, they've done absolutely jack shit with him.
Oh.
He was the TNA world champion. He was, you know, a big guy in NXT. He comes up to the main roster and does absolutely nothing. And you can tell he's miserable.
Vonnie and I, and that was the thing, like, when NXT came, I got Vonnie into it. And she was really into it. And I was getting really into it again. But then we started to see all of those wrestlers get called up. Sami Zayn was the one that killed it for her, was she loved him. And they never wrote him into anything. She was just like, well, if they're going to make a guy someone that you want to root for, they've eventually got to make a pay. I mean, it was interesting to see a very clean perspective on it. She's like, I don't want to watch this if there's no payoff to me being
a fan
behind these characters. And I was like, yeah, I get it. She's like, it's fun to watch it in the ring, but she's like, I need to see something else.
Did you hear about the tweet that Triple H liked and then deleted it like within a couple hours?
No, what was it?
Someone posted, because Vince McMahon on these board meetings on the phone, these phone board meetings they do, he's like, well, it's because the big stars are gone. That's why ratings are down. And someone wrote, no, Vince, it's not the big stars. There's no coherent stories or reason to care for these wrestlers. And Triple H liked that response tweet. I don't know if he did it by accident, but he did, and people screenshot it.
Just immediately like, yeah.
Yeah, Vince, well, you see the people don't want it, you know. That's my Triple H impression. But, yeah, I love pro wrestling. I want it to succeed, obviously. I want to watch it, but I want an entertaining venue. And I'm really going to push hard for AEW. And you should want it to succeed. Don't be a homer and just say, oh, well, they're the minor leagues. The more competition, the better.
Yes.
The better. The more alternatives of pro wrestling, the better. Not monopolies. Monopolies suck for everything in the world. That's capitalism. All right. Anything else going on in this this intro besides you not bringing me any food from the barbecue?
No.
Okay. Moving on. All right. Ian.
Patrick.
There's a big page break here. So there was an announcement on Twitter. You were excited. I this caught my eye. It's the Playdate Portable handheld console announced, Ian.
Yep. I'm pretty excited about this. So the Playdate is it's a new portable. It's coming out. It's by Panic. Panic I don't know much about their Macintosh or iOS software, but I do know that they started publishing games. Firewatch was critically acclaimed, and Untitled Goose Game is coming this year, and I'm actually looking forward to Untitled Goose Game.
The people that did Firewatch.
They're the people who published it.
They published it.
They published it. So, but apparently they have 20 years experience also doing Mac and iOS stuff that I was unaware of.
Okay.
So what they're putting out is a small
pocket
black
size
and white portable. It's got two buttons, the crosshair, cross pad.
D-pad.
And a crank on the side of it.
A metal crank.
A little spinny crank.
And there's rivets on the edges of the console as well, like metal rivets.
Yep. The design is very sleek and nice looking. As a matter of fact, the first
speakers on the side in metal.
First time I looked at it, I said, "Oh, that looks like a Teenage Engineering product." And sure enough, Teenage Engineering is doing the design.
So what have they done before?
Teenage Engineering. If you go to their website, they do. They are mostly known for synthesizers.
Okay.
They do pocket synthesizers that look like calculators. I have a bunch of those. They do the. They made the OP1, which is a very fun synthesizer to mess around with.
Been around since 2005, according to their Wikipedia.
They've done the OPZ. They've made speakers. Basically, they do a lot of very neat... I should have brought my OP1 over to show
OP1, you. OP1, which is a synth. OP Lab. OD11.
OD11's a speaker. Op Lab is a MIDI interface. The OP1...
The Frequenz designed for IKEA. I'm not sure what that is.
So, anyways, they're a great design company that is known for making electronics, usually with music involved, but
okay.
They've actually put games, like the OP1 has a little helicopter game.
Oh, really?
You can unlock it.
You should have brought it over.
And then you play it with the knobs.
Oh,
it's impossible, but it's still amusing.
Oh, that's cute.
Their OP... their PO series, the little pocket ones, have like segmented LCD displays.
So
anyways,
this is well-made stuff, so, well-engineered.
Yes. Usually known for being a bit overpriced, but very, very well-made stuff. For instance, the OP1, and I'm assuming this as well, is like one tooled piece of aluminum. You know, like it's well-made.
From my past synth experience, while going back in college, when I used to price them out because I bought a couple... Whenever you bought them from, like, the, you know, the ones that came out of Europe, they were more expensive.
Sure.
You know.
So, anyways, back on the playdate, though. So, it looks nice. It's made by, it's being designed by a company that's got two companies that have time in the game, as you were. There's no reason to not trust these companies.
They've put out products that have been successful.
Yeah, I would at least trust them on
that. It's not a Kickstarter.
No. It's not a Kickstarter. It's $150.
$150.
$150.
Isn't that nice?
How the games are going to be is there's a they're going to do it in seasons. So they've gotten a hold of people. Names are slipping me right now, but the
so no carts.
No, no carts.
Okay.
Keita Takahashi, who did Katamari Damacy, Zach Gage, who did stuff like Spell Tower. And then I don't know who these people are, unfortunately. Bennett Foddy and Sean Inman. They're all making small games for this system. And in a season, say there's 12 weeks, so the first season is 12 games, one will be released each week and will show up on your system. So you'll get a constant drip over a season of new games.
You get alerted with a notification, right?
Yep.
A little light.
I believe it's a light, yeah. You get alerted with some sort of notification. For instance, so they don't have to use the crank, but the crank is a very Teenage Engineering addition. Some games will just use the button, some will just use the crank, some will use both. The one that they're showing here appears to be, I think this is the one that Keita Takahashi's doing. It's like a time traveler one where it looks like you move the character by moving the crank. Forwards or back. And when you stop, they stop. So we'll have to see what happens. Right now it shows the Tin Man running, picking up, looking at a flower, and then it runs forward a little bit more, and I believe it gets suplexed by a woman.
She hugs a woman who suplexes her.
So
that's happened to me a couple times, not going to lie.
So... while I think it's very interesting and very cool, there are a couple things that I'm a bit concerned about with it.
We'll just go over a couple more things.
Okay.
According to this, it's 12 brand new video games, one each week. This is going to be early 2020. It's going to ship.
Yep.
What are these games? They're keeping the games a secret, and we can talk about that. It says some are short, some are long, some are experimental, some traditional, all are fun. When your Playdate lights up with a brand new game delivery, we hope you can't wait to unwrap your gift. There's so much more to come. But this is all the information we have right now, though.
Yes.
And it's going to be $149, as you said, $150. So what are your potential issues here, Ian?
Well, one, I can't tell if there's a backlight on the screen. Doesn't look like it. I heard some people say that there isn't. Well, we'd have to see about that. It seems silly to me that there wouldn't be.
I can't imagine in 2020 not having a backlit console.
However, my concerns are this. So it's $150. I like the season idea. But I think for what it is and for the amount of interest people may hold in it long term, I think $150 is kind of... It's borderline. Two, we already kind of have something like this. It's called the Ardu Boy. This has been...
Oh, that's right.
This is... I mean, it's not as beefy or robust, but my question is... For me, the Ardu Boy is 50. I have one and I use it a lot.
We talked about this in the podcast in the past, the Ardu Boy ever?
I don't think so. Well, we might have because I bought mine 2 years ago in Portland. And I've been using it since.
And that's a small one, right?
Very small. It's literally business card sized and can fit in a business card slot.
Oh, Jesus.
Here.
Okay.
So
this looks cool.
If what the goal of this is to provide a small, you know, fun game experience when you need one, there's already something that can do that out there, but cheaper.
And there's more games.
And there's over 100 games for it.
And those are developed, those are just the community developing those?
Community
or?
Developed, I don't think there's any that you pay for. I think it's all open.
And that's how much is the Ardu Boy?
50.
$50. Yep. Okay. I think I'm going to pick one up. I don't think I was aware of this.
Really? We showed it to you.
I think you showed it to me, but Portland doesn't count. I'm out of it.
So, anyways.
Open source too.
Okay. It's blown wide open. However, it's not as accessible or easy to use as they're saying this is. It's not tricky, but you do need to have to learn how to load like a game onto the Ardu Boy and stuff like that.
Okay,
it's not that hard. You download Arduino IDE on your computer, and then you
so USB.
You download a loader. Yeah,
it's a good USB little guy. Mm-hmm. It's business card size. You got to show me this.
So this is
more to me. This.
There's already something like it, and it hasn't reached mainstream. If this is going to reach mainstream, and it seems like it's going to,
it's got a lot of buzz.
It's going to be on the excellent marketing that it's getting.
Yes,
and that's also there's that issue.
This is in a weird area of tech toy. It's in between a video game console and tech toy. It's not to me a video game console yet.
The life of this thing is it's going. I think it really needs to be open. I think it needs to be open source.
Well, you need more. You need to get. First of all, you need a guarantee that these 12 games are going to be on it. Because what happens if the dev on a few of these games just goes under?
Oh, I think they did already. I think
they're all done.
I think the first season is in the bag, but they're not telling people about them.
See, that's the thing, though. We got to know what these games are before this comes out.
No, I don't think you do.
I think you do.
At 150, that's not the market. The market for this
A tech market.
Is people who want to be surprised by little bite-sized stuff.
Then this is going to be a niche product. It'll remain a niche product. It'll sell well for that, but it won't blow up.
You know, once people have it and start talking about it, though, then it would probably get... only have to wait and not know what the games are for 12 weeks after it comes out. And then everyone's going to know what's on Season 12, and then you can make that decision.
But
if
that's
part
of the fun, knowing that the game's coming out... like I said, this to me is a tech toy. This is not, to me, like a game console.
I'm in agreement with you there. It is. It's more of a toy, less of a portable gaming console.
I'm not on board with this. I'd be on board with the $50 Ardu Boy.
So,
you know, that's more where I'm at, because, you know, you have a list of games that you know about, and plus you don't know if this isn't a success, maybe that's all the games you get is 12.
Well, yeah,
then it's dead.
That's a concern too. That's,
it's a dead console after that.
That's one that I was going to as well. That's why I think open source is necessary. I have a feeling that, much like teenage engineering stuff, I have a feeling this from Panic is going to sell very, very fast at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But unlike something like a synthesizer, I wonder, you know, you can keep making stuff on a synthesizer. You can keep finding new ways to create stuff. If there's only 12 games on this, that could be an issue at some point.
Oh,
but I think some people at 150 will buy it and be like, what we get is fine. It's because of its weird marketplace that you could just look at it as a toy with 12 games on it.
And never do anything with it again. And be happy with it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people might be going into it with that mindset.
But that's not that again, that's a different market. That's people that have money to blow.
The market...
That's like, oh, we'll spend money on the Atari VCS because it looks cute, but we'll never use it.
Yeah, it's a video game system, but it's marketed to a somewhat different audience.
Yeah, but I'll tell you this, though. This is the way you do a modern console.
Oh, absolutely.
This is the way you do it. It isn't just, well, this is just another platform where you can get the same games on 18 other ways.
Yeah.
This is something where we have exclusive games, they're unique games because of the platform, and we have people on board ahead of time. Like, this is an angle that... And it got buzz because of that. Just because of the fucking... There's no reason to put the crank on otherwise that this got buzz because of the crank. You know, like, it got buzz because of that.
Teenage Engineering does stuff like that all the time. Like, you could buy a crank for the top, for the knobs along the top of the OP1, and then you could actually get, like, Lego connects and stuff and, like, connect Lego gears to it and then turn it on and just... You could crank it to turn all the knobs at once. They love putting little weird shit...
Little gadgets?
...on there because that is. It's what... This would have gotten notice without the crank, but the crank is what pushed it.
The crank is like, why? You ask, why is there a game system with a crank on it?
Yeah.
So that's my biggest concern. Ian says it'll be fine if it's just 12 games and that's it.
I think for the market that's actually going to buy it, I honestly don't think they'll care if nothing else happens with it.
If it's just $150, it's a cool tech toy.
And I know lots of people who won't buy it for that, but I think the people, what I'm trying at, I'm not saying you should want that or you, I'm that's saying, what you should, but I think the people who are actually going to end up buying this are going to be fine with it being a standalone conversation piece at worst.
Gotcha. I'm just saying this limits your potential audience. It just does. Because at $150, this is no longer, whatever, if it sucks, it sucks. This is an investment to a lot of people. $150 is not a...
It's not...
It's not $50. It's not even $80.
They said it's not very cheap or very expensive. I think thinking that $150 for something like this
is... expensive to most people.
I wouldn't mind paying it, but don't call that cheap.
No.
The Ardu Boy is cheap.
A $60 NES Classic is cheap.
Yeah, an Ardu Boy at $50.
Yeah, once you get to like $80... I know the dollar, you know, I know with inflation, it's different than $80 20, 30 years ago. But once you get over $100, now we're into the realm of, oh, you can get some modern consoles for $200, you know, when they're re-released and different editions. And, you know, once you approach modern gaming prices, you know, this isn't like, I mean, it's new engineering, but this is going to be like the analog, you know, systems where you'll constantly use with different games. If this is 12 games and you're done, then you have a really expensive Tiger LCD collection.
It's a toy.
That's what you have. But it's cool. I'm actually not more interested in the Ardu Boy. I'm not sure how I forgot about this. I must have seen it. You must have shown me this at some point.
I did. Vonnie has one. Trying to think. I think Rue bought one that year.
A couple years ago?
Yeah, because I saw them there, and I had heard of them, and I was like, I want this. And then I told everyone else about it, and a few people went to go get it.
Is that backlit?
It's a black and white OLED screen.
Okay.
Yeah, all your graphics are white on black.
So you don't need it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's bright.
You can play Blackjack on it and a little Zelda adventure games. Okay, I want this.
There's little shooters and all sorts of neat stuff on it.
I want the Ardu Boy, and we'll see. I'm sure they're going to have to announce a couple of these games before the Playdate comes out, or at least give you an idea. I don't think they're going to have people totally in the dark on these.
I think that, I think for a lot of people who are buying this, though, the other thing is most people know at least a few of these...
Of the devs.
And I think that's another thing that separates it from a normal game system is, like I said, the secret of the games and knowing the devs and knowing you've enjoyed their past games, I think is supposed to be, honestly, enough for the amount of people. The amount of these that they're going to make... will sell. And I think
a couple thousand.
Yeah, I mean, they said they had 70,000 people on their wait list. They ain't making 70,000 of these. I don't think. That'd be cool, but I don't think they are. So it's going to sell out fast.
5,000? 10?
We'll see.
Okay.
But I think it's going to be... I think it's always going to hold its own niche. Even if it comes out and flops, it's going to be something that people are going to want later.
All right, moving on. Ian, we have another article from award-winning journalist at Kotaku, Cecilia D'Anastasio.
Yes.
Does great work.
Yeah, all of her articles are...
I only had an issue with one of her article in the past that we talked about.
Was it the...
It was the game store owners
complaining. Yeah, that one was not
That was
good.
Off, Cecilia, but overall, you're doing good work. No one's perfect.
Jesus.
But the article is called Shady Numbers and Bad Business Inside the Esports Bubble. And Ms. D'Anastasio spoke to 17 people inside the esports, insiders of the esports industry. And this is a long article, and I encourage people out there to actually read through as much as you can. This is like a Sunday morning read. One of those like, oh, let's have a cup of coffee and read through this.
Sure.
It's meaty. And we're going to try to summarize what's going on. But the TLDR of it is that there's an esports bubble. The industry is not making money. It's being propped up by allegedly false viewing numbers, sponsors spending money and not getting any on the return, and investors, angel investors, other investors who haven't seen a dime of their investment back yet. That's what it seems to be happening here.
So money is being fed into a furnace and burned and nothing's coming, but it's not producing anything.
Esports players are getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars a year of salary that is not supported by the industry that they're in. Does that make sense?
Sure.
This happened in the NHL 15 years ago, for example, when they did this strike.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Players were getting paid contracts that, like, NBA players were getting paid and NFL players were paid. And but there wasn't money being brought into the league to support it, and that's why we lost an NHL season in, was that 2003 or 4 or 5,
yeah,
whatever it was. So this is an industry, though, that is not totally analogous to sports, just because with esports, you don't have long, rich traditions that get passed down yet. Esports is only, like, say, like 15 years old, 20 years old, if you want to say that. And the popular games in esports will change either year over year or every 3 or 4 years. There's very few that have remained constant. So when you take all this into account, you cannot say this is an analog to sports that start up, because this says before, baseball is the same sport it was by and large 100 years ago. Football is the same sport it was 60 years ago. Basketball is the same sport it was 70 years ago. So it's a much stranger sort of business venture to sort of build upon, where not only do you need capital to start it, you need capital to get tournaments going. The way physical sports started was, well, we all play in a field. Then we all organize. We don't need necessarily backers, but we're gaining interest slowly. This is money in first, and hopefully the interest comes back out to support it later. Does that make sense? This isn't organic growth.
Sure.
And when you read this article, you have people straight up saying that, well, they're trying to get sponsors based upon numbers views of the event that are totally just false. It's been alleged in this article that Twitch's relationship to this cursed network of websites, they'll embed the the stream on all these smaller websites that you might, a totally unrelated website, you can just do a Google search for, I don't know, anime chicks or whatever, not that I've done that, and it'll be playing in the corner. That counts as a view even if you're not interacting with it. So they're discovering that a lot of these reported, 200,000 people have viewed this event. Maybe it's only really under 100,000. And you might think it's not
important.
They're
embedding false numbers.
Yes, Ian, they're embedding false numbers. And the problem with that is that these are the numbers they might be bringing to potential investors and sponsors.
Right.
Popping up saying, we got 250,000 people watching this event. That means you're you can advertise your product. You can be a sponsor of this tournament. A sponsor might buy into that not knowing. The issue is that over years and years of time, if the sponsor is not seeing a return on their investment, there's no more sponsorship. We're not there yet, but we could be soon. And that's what this article gets at, some of these issues we're seeing here.
You can only fake it for so long before you're expected to make it, and they're not.
This isn't necessarily a house of cards right now, esports.
But it's exceeding it's exceeding far longer than it, or far larger than it should be.
The amount of interest versus the money being put into it is not equal. There's no correlation at this point. And sponsors probably are starting to figure this out slowly. Investors probably know, because if you're an investor, all you care about is, am I making my money back? And am I getting return on my investment? And if you're not at this point, after, say, you have money in this for 8, 9, 10 years, you want to say modern esports, like 10 years or so, something like that, you're gonna be like, what the fuck? I'm not putting any more money in because this is bullshit. And now everyone knows about it. So we are approaching, I think, this where, I'm not saying this is going to blow up and you won't see any more esports ever again, but I think you're going to see a contraction. You're going to see it come back down to earth to match the interest and the money together so that it can grow, so that it can grow more organically, and you don't have these puffed up numbers of people watching these events and people bragging that, oh, well, esports, there's more people watching these esports than the Super Bowl. And it's like, well, really? Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the problem with that issue as well was, I don't think the article talked about was that there's a big difference in terms of numbers of viewers when it comes to sponsorships and businesses, is that it doesn't matter necessarily how many people are watching it. How many people are watching your event that have the power to purchase products?
Right. It's not. Yeah. It's what is the buying audience?
What is the buying power of the audience?
Not the total.
If you have 50,000 people. If you have 50,000 people watching an esports event, but half of them aren't 18 years old yet, that means they don't have money necessarily to buy the products that are being advertised, to buy the gaming rigs that are sponsoring the event, to buy the LCD monitors, to buy the headset. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
If you're 35 watching it, you have the money to do that. And so that's why it's always been like the coveted or whatever. It's like the males 24 to whatever it was like 21 to 34 was always the coveted in radio, like, range of,
that's what I always understood.
That was the coveted audience. So it's cool to say that, yeah, we're going to make an esports venue. We talked about it in Philly. But
that's an example. That's a perfect example of
where we said, like, well, is this going to be able to hold its own weight? Is they're going to be able to make their money back? Because a discussion in the article was that even in physical sports, the venues themselves never make a return on their investment. You spend $1 billion or $2, you don't make your money back. Where you make your money back is sponsorships and TV deals and merchandise and things of that nature. But you don't have that built up. You don't have that buying power fan base built up in esports yet. You just don't.
I wonder, and I read most of it, but I don't remember seeing this. I wonder what I feel like fighting game stuff, people who play fighting games for money, if you can call that esports, I feel like that's kind of a separate on its own thing aside from...
Because that's grown fairly organically,
right? I was going to say, that's grown organically.
That has been pushed by, like, Overwatch League, where the people making the game has the league.
Evo, I mean, I don't know.
Conflicts of interest?
I don't know, but Evo seems like it's doing just fine.
Sure.
But Evo kind of exists, it's a yearly tournament. It's not really a esports league.
No.
But that fighting game tournament scene, I don't know, it seems to be doing something different or better than I would say the rest of esports,
because it grew. What you see those videos on YouTube from, like, when they were, from 20 years ago, people were competing,
sitting in the back of a laundromat playing.
So that grew more like a traditional sport,
right,
where you play baseball in a barn field, you organize locally, you grow over a decade
and
or
it's,
two.
And it's around an entire game
genre
that, where even if you don't know the game, you know kind of the mechanics carrying.
And it's not
over.
Dependent upon one game,
right?
And this article brought up something I've talked about before, where you can't follow the casual person like me. I'm not even a casual, I'm into video games, don't say anything, but
okay.
I can't follow Dota, and League of Legends. I can't follow it,
right? I can follow a fighting game just fine.
I can follow fighting games, I can follow first person shooters.
See,
even though, but I could remember I brought up watching the one I just
Overwatch
talked about. Yeah, I could kind of follow
right
the teams. I can't follow these MOBA games. I can't,
right?
And that's because I'm old. There's so much shit going on that unless I'm trained in the game and I've played it long periods of time, I'm never gonna catch on. You can follow sports easily. You can get into it. You can follow fighting games because it's one guy hitting another. It's simple.
Yeah, even if you don't understand the eccentricities, not the eccentricities, the minute details of sports, you know that, okay, this team has to get more baskets. This team has to get more pucks in the net.
Sure. So how many people are in actuality are watching these events on Twitch and online versus what's being reported by the people running the events. There's no third-party independent people reporting the number of people watching. So the people reporting the numbers are the people that have a vested interest in it succeeding. It's not like the Nielsen ratings were on TV, where the Nielsen ratings are totally independent of the networks. So their numbers are real. They're third party. They're objective. Here, it could be Twitch reporting it or other people running the event. So it's in their best interest to fudge the numbers or outright falsify them with things like the embeds on the other websites, where all of a sudden, in this article, the numbers will double or triple because allegedly they paid the Curse Network to all of a sudden embed them all on all these various websites that people are visiting, but they have no interest in watching the event. It's just playing in the quarter.
They don't want to watch the embed.
The embed, yes.
The embed.
It's the accent on the word.
If we keep saying embed long enough, it's going to be one of the...
It's going to be fucked with us, yes.
Yeah, it's not going to... It's going to cease to have meaning.
But, there's no way out of this. Once you get this deep with the amount of money involved, where unless sponsors and investors of teams, and now, people are now buying parts of teams as if they're sports teams, or you can invest in parts of teams and things like that nature. It just seems like we're not there yet. We're just not. This is like the NBA in like the 30s, where it's like, we're still getting the rules together of how this works. Can we make money yet? This hasn't been...
We're changing the peach buckets to bats.
ever read about the old women's basketball where it was different? You couldn't move. You were just stationary.
No, actually, I did not know that.
Yeah, that was until like the 70s and some colleges even. Anyway. Sorry.
Like
playing
ultimate frisbee. You can take two steps and then get rid of it.
But they talked to one person that said, yeah, this isn't going to be a bubble. I want this to contract, though. I want the interest to match the money in here, because if it doesn't, the bottom then falls out of this.
I need to get my water.
You need to get your water?
Yes.
All right, so I'll finish the topic. Ian, thanks a lot. You couldn't wait till the end of the topic for some reason. This professional podcast. So
I'm literally going right here.
there's even at live events that could be falsifying allegedly numbers. So one source said that there was an event in Vegas where they said there were 10,000 attendees, but that was over the 3-day event.
That wasn't
10,000 unique people. That was them,
I was going to say that's counting. That was returns.
That was triple counting around 3,000 people. You can't get away with that for too long.
Yeah, you can't even do that at video game conventions. You can't really fudge those numbers.
Well, because
it's just going to come back.
Because the people spending money, the sponsors find out, the vendors find out. If there's not a return on your investment, they're not going to come back.
Right.
So I'm glad you brought up the thing about Evo, because I think that's totally different, like you said.
That's kind of the main thing I wanted to bring up, is how different esports seems to be from the fighting game community, I guess, but there's still celebrities. There's still people who make money. Mm-hmm. But I think it's kind of important to note that maybe they're not one and the same.
So it sounds like Cecilia attended Overwatch League Grand Finals it sold out at New York Barclays Center last year, 19,000 seat venue. Said that was a good sign. That's Blizzard's event, obviously.
Right.
But then online, though, the finals were embedded across Reddit, IMDb, Gamepedia, and other websites.
Embedded across Reddit.
Yes. And then they said the live stream jumped from 100,000 to 300,000. It tripled. Those are not real viewers.
Yeah.
You can't do this. But I think they're too much into it money-wise. I think they have to. They have to keep pumping the money in. But that's what a bubble is, though. That's the definition. You keep pumping in money more and more, but the business doesn't support the money being pumped in.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying I want this to fail, but this cannot continue this way. You cannot pay out esports people six-figure contracts if they're not justified to get paid.
Yeah, you can't give someone...
WNBA players aren't paid that much money. And women hockey players, because the league hasn't built up to support that yet, they're trying to get there, and they're throwing money at these kids.
Yeah.
Just throwing money at them.
You can't pay these kids like they're... Well, kids, adults, whatever. You can't pay these people...
Or young adults.
Can't pay these people like they're professional sports stars just because you want it to look like professional sports.
Yes.
That doesn't work.
But that's where we're at.
Yeah. It's all image at this point, no substance.
Anything else to add? Anything else you got out of this? Did I hit most of the big talking points
here? You got it.
Oh, thanks.
You asked, I answered. You got it.
All right, all right. So, and there you have it. And so we'll see. I see over the next 3 or 4 years, we said in the podcast before, I have not seen the growth. I've seen it sort of level off in terms of just what I've noticed. Yes, there's some events on TV. That's interesting, but it's a great article. Check it out. All right, Ian.
Patrick.
Do you have a disorder, Ian?
I have a lot of disorders.
Do you have the gaming disorder?
I don't believe so, no.
According to the World Health Organization, we talked about this at least once before.
Mm-hmm.
Gaming disorder is now a recognized illness, according to the WHO. They decided to add gaming disorder to its list of recognized illnesses. The 194 members of the group made a decision today at the 72nd World Health Assembly. Sounds like a hot time. I wonder what the after parties are like at the WHO. A lot of moderate drinking.
Yeah.
No, they go off, WHO. They agreed to adopt the 11th revision of the International Statistical Classification of Diseases and Related Health Problems, known as ICD-11.
All right, I'll read what this is.
What qualifies, Ian?
A pattern of persistent or recurrent gaming behavior, digital gaming or video gaming, which may be online, over the internet, or offline, manifested by 1. Impaired control over gaming, e.g. onset, frequency, intensity, duration, termination, and context. 2. Increasing priority given to gaming to the extent that gaming takes precedence over other life interests and daily activities. And 3. Continuation or escalation of gaming despite the occurrence of negative consequences. The behavior pattern is of sufficient severity to result in significant impairment in personal, family, social, educational, occupational, or other important areas of functioning.
And that's really, when you talk about...
it's an addictive disorder.
Any addictive disorder. Drinking, drugs, sex. Whenever it starts screwing up with your main, we'll just say the important parts of life. There's things more important than video games out there. Don't do another attack video on us. When your family and personal life and your friendships all suffer, when you can't hold down a job anymore or a decent job or you're having trouble, then we got a problem.
And that would go, and yeah, it's not just gaming. That would go for any hobby, anything. Yes. If you're into model boats and all you do is build model boats and don't bathe and leave your family alone, it's a problem as well.
Is there a model boat pod? I want to get into model boats. It sounds very relaxing. Building model boats, and you get them up with your RC on the...
Legos are relaxing.
Legos are relaxing?
Yeah.
I want to get into model boats when I get into my 60s. I decided that. Right,
going to get a pond in the backyard?
Get a pond, castle country, get a moat.
A moat.
So obviously people online were derisive about this. They're like, oh, I've gaming cancer. No, it's not something to make light of if this affects a certain amount of people to the extent where they lose a job or, you know. It was funny where the one picture I saw, it was like a drawn like GTA style picture of the... this guy playing a video game with this hot girl from the background, like looking like, what are you doing? With though a poster of a bikini girl behind the guy playing the video game. It was like, it was literally like a GTA parody thing. I'm just going to say this, the likelihood of a guy having a hot girlfriend lessens more and more if you have bikini posters on your wall. It's just a general correlation, I believe. inverse correlation. It was just a funny picture. I should have downloaded it. Where did I see that? It was just funny. That picture. But it was the quintessential, hey, have sex with me, stop playing video games. And not saying that's a common occurrence, that's definitely an occurrence, though.
Sure.
That's probably happened in relationships where someone shows an interest in a video game versus their significant other and takes them for granted.
So this could apply to sports fandom, game fandom, etc. My question is there a... I mean, I know there's sex addiction that they talk about, but are there names for other ones? My thing is, why does this one get singled up for its own disorder instead of just being part of like a, you know, an addictive personality disorder? Is there a similar entry for, say, sports addiction?
Well, you can Google it, Ian. But this is why they classify them, because then they can have a better plan of attack to react to it. They can say,
sure,
this is how we deal with people specifically who play video games too much. We can have treatments and we can have programs designed just for them versus someone who, I don't know, Ian, watches too much sports or you know what I mean? Like, there's different ways you can do it. And I think, to me, the main difference between, if you want to say sports fans and this, is that with sports, there's specific times you watch them and not. With video games, it can be 24 hours. It can be people that play for days on end, which is not, that's not something that hasn't happened. It's happened. People have died in gaming parlors who have, over in Asia, who have played games for multiple days and they just fucking drop dead because they get an embolism in their legs. They've been sitting too long.
Sure.
This has happened. And I think that's why.
Yeah, I looked it up. I don't see any. I mean, there's lots of sports addiction help sites and whatnot, but I don't see anything from the World Health Organization.
And I think because in some countries we spoke about, like in South Korea, where they have like gaming parlors that people, you have to drag them out like opium dens. I think that's the difference. I think with video games, it can be all encapsulating. It's more interactive than say watching sports. You get caught up on it easier. And there are some games designed to keep you playing. I think that's the other big difference. Here. So from that instance, you could say, well, it's a drug of at some point. Some particular games I brought up in the past, any sort of game where you have to be online a certain time, like in a guild or a clan, World of Warcraft, my sister's ex had to be online every Tuesday night, every Saturday afternoon. Well, what if your significant other doesn't want that? What if they say, this is bullshit now, spend time with me, let's go out, let's do something. And no, I got to be playing this fucking game with my clan. With my guild now.
I mean, frankly, if it's a one Tuesday a night thing, a week thing, that's fine. You can make schedules and work on each other's schedules. But the fact of the matter is, it's never just a Tuesday night for these people.
Yeah, they got to practice. I get together. It's a social thing. It becomes ingrained in their existence. And that's why, again, I think they singled it out here. So, let's see. It's a big, according to this article on Kotaku, classification and recognition of gaming disorder is a big step forward in the debate surrounding gaming addiction. Recently, members of the U.S. Congress began creating legislation to ban addictive loot boxes, which we spoke about, which is straight up gambling, even though they try to... Oh, of course, the ESA didn't like this. The ESA was like, no, this is crazy having this. It's like, come on, man. You're making tons of fucking money.
Yeah.
You can at least admit that maybe some people might have an addictive problem with video games. Not everyone, but maybe some. ESA, I'm more and more, to me, looking like the tobacco industry. The people trying to deny that, well, no, there's no problem at all. I don't know what you're talking about. Cancer, emphysema? No. No, loot boxes aren't gambling. What the...
Yeah.
You're being overprotective. Then eventually it comes crashing down when it hurts inside. I don't know why I just said that.
I don't know.
I don't make Hogan references ever. All right. What do you think, Ian? Do you think... let's ask you this. Do you know anyone that you think could have classified as being addicted to games to this level?
Yeah. At a point in time, I think there were people that I knew that could be classified as that, including a close friend. I never lost contact with them. I think that was the one thing I could get them to do every week was to get out, go to the club, go have some breakfast, you know,
that, up in the club.
And it wasn't like crazy bad, but it, you know, this was a person, I don't know anyone who was like real bad, but this was a guy who would, get home, pop on Final Fantasy XI, and that's what he did until the morning. Go back to work, get home
until the morning.
Yeah.
So he stayed up all night.
Yeah. He would often stay up, you know, all night. But, you know, he overcame it. But, yeah, the situation I see it mostly in is online RPGs.
MMORPGs?
MMORPGs. And over time, I have softened to the idea that, yes, there is an addictive quality to video games for some people. I'm not completely there yet, but there's something about that. You have to keep these real-world online video game relationships up, but there's also I think what really does it with MMORPGs is when you're playing with a group of people, you all want to stay the same level. So if you drop off for a day, you don't keep up with the rest of your pack, and to keep up with the rest of your pack, you have to be playing constantly.
And plus there's social mores within these communities online. It's its own social group. You don't want people to look down on you. Well, you didn't show up to the, you know, to whatever, the fucking bat hitting cave adventure last week. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, whatever.
Right.
Like, why weren't you there? You get shamed. I read an article from about a kid who used to be, like, in this World War II online game clan where it was run like a military unit.
Oh, there was an article recently on that.
Did you read that?
I read little bits and pieces of it. Where, yeah, it was basically like they ran it like a military regiment. I can't remember which game.
So you had to show up.
Yeah.
You had to... The kid ran home from school to practice this first-person shooter game.
Yeah.
It's insane. I'm not saying that you don't have the right to do that, but at some point it takes over. It just takes over. And then if you can function in your life with the game taking that much time, that's fine. But the moment that it doesn't, the moment that like you lose your job or your friends don't hear from anymore or your family, then it's a problem at that point. Then it becomes an issue there. I've seen it with a few people. With me, the closest it probably got was Unreal Tournament wasn't every day. It was a few times a week back in the mid-2000s. I played it a lot, though. I was in a clan at one point. And it got to the point, though, where it was just like, well, I always try to think, well, long-term, what is this doing? And not saying I dropped it cold turkey, but I was like, to me, it became just a waste of time after a while because I was not doing other things I wanted to do.
Sure.
That I could have. And so then I just got out of it. Just sort of just slowly dissipated. And then the last time you blew up that rocket launcher, and then that's it. You're done. Or shoot that flat cannon into someone's face. Ba-choo, ba-choo, ba-choo. All right. Anything else to add, Ian?
No.
Am I addicted to gaming collecting disorder? Is that a disorder yet?
We'll see how much you get rid of in the summer. We're proud to partner with FlexPro Meals. FlexPro Meals is a meal delivery company that sends healthy pre-made meals to your doorstep. Their goal isn't to give you salad, but epic recipes, entrees you may have grown up on, that they make healthier versions of. Eating healthy is a lifestyle change, not a two-week gimmick, so it's their responsibility to go the extra mile, giving us the most value with realistic and tasty meal options at a good price.
FlexPro Meals offers a weight loss fat trimmer plan and a lean muscle larger portion plan. Yeah, that's what Pat gets. Yeah. Some of those popular meal entries are their smoked brisket mac, the breakfast burrito, and more. They just added a bunch of new ones, Ian. Ian, you've had the chicken and dumplings, right?
I've had the dumplings. The chicken piccata is really good.
They added the egg roll bowl.
Ooh.
That's a new one.
That is.
The Italian sauce is rigatoni.
That's a good one.
That's one of my favorites. You just add a little bit of water to it. When you microwave, just a little bit. Keeps that pasta nice. Homemade tamales have been really good. I've enjoyed
Bonnie
those.
Bonnie likes those, actually.
The beef stroganoff's been good. I'm getting hungry. And then they just added the Eggs Benedict. That's a new one.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll have to get that.
Hey, I'm not saying that'll be every meal that I order in the future, but I'm an Eggs Benedict fiend.
So is Vonnie. Vonnie is a hardcore Eggs Benedict aficionado.
All right, intermittent fasting. I got to temper it down. All right, they also have stuff like steak with potatoes and chicken with sweet potatoes. That's your like standard meal if you want to be in shape and it's nice and healthy. Good sweet potatoes. So for 20% off your first order, use code CUPODCAST when you visit flexpromeals.com. That's 20% off your first meal at flexpromeals.com. Use code CUPODCAST. Some yummy meals await.
Woo.
Ian.
Pat.
Sad times for video game preservation.
Oh, yeah. This is...
We're on the upswing until this news came.
Yeah, this is gross. So, back into game preservation and the shady, shitty stuff that goes on. Forest of Illusion reports that they regret to inform that the auction for Indy the Magical Kid, an undumped Famicom game...
Prototype. Unreleased.
It ended up, they were unable to... So, basically, Forest of Illusion, they found out that there's this undumped prototype, right? It's called Indy the Magical Kid.
It was on, Yahoo Auction?
Yes. Okay. It went up, and people pooled money together to try to make sure that it was, one, to be preserved. I think what they had was 1 million yen, or 1.5 million yen. The game ended up selling for 1,501,000 yen.
Which is 13,750 US.
Right.
That's a lot of fucking money.
And that appears to have come from one person. They did not win, sadly. The person that they were fighting against won. They are in Japan. The news is kind of... It's bad. They don't expect to ever see that again. Because the guy literally posted... Let me just find this. The winner of the auction left an anonymous message saying that they bought it to stop copy sales and dumps. And they also said I will always protect it as a Japanese treasure. Oh my god, I'm making the wank motion so hard, I swear I'd rip my fucking dick off. It's, this is the stuff that makes me not want to deal with the shit at all. We have people who are very obviously spiteful and up their own ass and think that they're the only people who could, you know, who can protect something. Owning it is not protecting it. Preserving it by yourself, you're not preserving a treasure that way. You're just holding onto a piece of plastic that's going to rot. So if it's a treasure, why not get it out there?
It's a sense of superiority.
It's a superiority complex.
It's narcissistic.
Yep.
To think that only I should be able to enjoy this. Make no mistake, that has nothing to do with worrying about money. The fact that copy sales, or I guess pirated copies, yes, that can be you might think that's bad, but if you have to spin around in your head, in your own head, that that's worse than no one being able to access it, I just don't get that.
I also don't believe it. I think it's bullshit.
It's bullshit. It's bullshit, obviously.
Because you can still protect it and have it dumped. It's simply a power trip. People want to find power in anything they can do.
Yeah.
And this is how people in game collecting get their kicks. This is how they get off on power, is to own something that no one else has and then come up with a bullshit reason behind why they couldn't dump it.
I had a short Twitter exchange with Steve Lin, and he mentioned that when he's approached people in the past to, you know, to purchase, if he heard something was for sale, potentially an undumped prototype, and he was refused to buy them because, oh, you'll just take it and,
oh yeah,
and have
it dumped. I saw that he had tweeted that. Yeah, basically they're like, oh, you're that
person,
game history or guy. Yeah, we don't want that.
And my response is, well, then what? Who are they okay selling it to? Are they only okay selling it to collectors that are going to keep it locked up forever in a vault, person to person, like some sort of weird fucking treasure? Like some sort of weird grail? And that's what I think some of these people think. They think that this is something that, since it's one of a kind, that there's some power or mystique imbued in a physical object. Like it's a fucking like painting.
Yeah.
It's not a painting. It's a tomb holding some digital information that people worked on.
Exactly.
That were supposed to be sold to the public at some point, and they decided not to.
And the body is slowly decaying inside.
Yes.
There is a time limit here.
It was a product, an entertainment product, that just didn't make it out to the world for business reasons, or a company went under, or they went in a different direction. That's all that is. It's not the Mona Lisa.
Yeah. But it's a treasure.
It's not the fucking Shroud of Turin that you have out there. It's not. So there's no good solution to this. Because if it's just a money thing, you're always going to have some rich person out there that has too much money to spend that'll spend. In the past, undumped prototypes on, if you want to say NES, Super Nintendo, they go for a couple grand, you know, a little bit more than that. And most $13,000, almost $14,000. That's nuts. And at that point, almost everyone's priced out except people like this that just have a, you know, almost happened with the SimCity NES. It almost happened.
Yep.
Almost fucking happened. There's not much you can do. Humans are scum. A lot of humans are scum. That's the only thing I can say. And it bleeds into almost every avenue of our lives. Stuff that you think is important, obviously, and then inconsequential stuff that 90% of people be like, well, who cares? It's a video game. But for us, it's very important, obviously, because this is what we deal with. This is our industry. So we're going to get into a topic which might explain why this is happening. But I think one of the reasons why this is happening, I believe, is there's been a focus, a shift in certain people getting into video game collecting in general that I think this has caused. Mm. Or this isn't helping. These prices go up for some of this stuff. That's all I'm going to say on it. Maybe we see this game, Indie the Magical Kid, maybe we see it in 20 years from now. but this person decides to sell it, or they die and someone else gets it. But then you hope that the person that gets the game knows what it is, doesn't just dump it, or sells it to someone who doesn't know what it is.
Sure.
You know, like,
no, you want them to dump it, but you mean doesn't just sell it off.
I mean dump it off to someone.
Yeah.
Give it to someone who doesn't know what it is, which is the danger when this stuff happens. So, kind of depressing topic, Ian.
Yeah, you wouldn't want it to go to Patrick Scott Patterson, for instance.
Oh, he'd preserve it.
Oh, sure would.
He'd preserve it. All right, Ian.
Yes.
News that has rocked.
A small corner of the internet.
My favorite website, Ian. I haven't said it in a while. Nintendo Age has been sold to Go Collect. So this was announced, I believe, over the weekend. So it was announced with a post on the Nintendo Age forum. So Go Collect, Ian. I don't know if you've ever been there before. I've heard the name before. I don't know how often I visited it, but it's a comic book price guide site.
Okay.
You can search for comics. I think there's tools to sell things, and there's a few like that. There's comic book price. There's a few comic book websites like that where you can track what you have. Say, oh, I want this comic. You know what I mean? And there's prices for conditions. I'm going on the website right now, and you have, oh, Fantastic Four number 48. My uncle has it. He won't give it to me. And then you can see people that, okay, there's graded values from 9.8 down to, you know, poor condition, you know, 0.5. And then you see like a scale of consensus, a sense of how many people own it at different values, restored. So this is the individual that bought Nintendo Age. And in his message on Nintendo Age was, my name is Jeff Meyer. I'm the founder of GoCollect.com. I'm on a mission in 2019 to work towards making collecting better, whatever you may collect. Go Collect has focused on comic books for years, but is entering the video game space with various collector tools, including a soon-to-come price guide and robust sale tracking solution that the hobby is currently lacking. When a single game has countless variants, it's important to appropriately assign each sale to its proper version, and in my opinion, it's important to be able to distinguish those variants in your collection. Nintendo Age has been my go-to resource for understanding this hobby. The information available through the database of consoles and various forum discussions is priceless. That's where the story here gets interesting. Go Collect has officially acquired the Nintendo Age website and its sister sites. As a heavy collector of Golden Age comics, I'm well aware that news like this can be taken very personally. I won't ever know that's personal to me. Blah, blah, blah. They're not looking to step in and shake up the site with all sorts of changes. That's not up. We're not some big corporation trying to make a big buck. Yada, yada, yada. And they're going to do a preview release, I guess, of the video games section of Go Collect coming in June 14th. They're going to reveal at the Charlotte Heroes Con. And then it goes on from there with an FAQ about that. News did not go over well.
Yeah.
With people on Nintendo Age.
That's almost
universally panned.
I've heard the moderators didn't know.
Moderators did not find out about it. I don't want to focus more on the communication factor between what happened between Jeff here and Dane, who we personally know, who sold the site, who built it from the ground
up. I don't personally know him. You do.
I've never met him. Okay. I've known Dane for years. On a side note, which is related, Dane sold his entire video game collection. Dane had a gigantic collection.
Yeah.
Dane had, you know, complete NES, Super Nintendo, and I think Game Boy, just about complete in box.
I was just reading something here that says the Game Boy stuff got sold a few years ago.
Okay. So, but he had...
Yeah.
The holy trinity of Nintendo consoles.
Yeah.
If you want to say it. Everything. And other stuff, too. You know, he probably had, if I had to guess, you know, he probably had 10,000 games. It's probably a decent estimate. You know, maybe more. It's all gone now. So obviously he's moved on. He's moved on, and obviously it's his right to do so. And I wish him health and happiness. When it comes to that, but we're now at an inflection point where someone's buying a database to add to their existing database of comics,
right,
to branch off and do something else. And people on the forum have an issue with that, because to them, they see Nintendo Age as a huge wealth knowledge of people posting about things they found or artifacts and variants. Obviously, a lot of the information in the past that came out first about, oh, did you know about this 5-screw Mike Tyson's punch out? Did you know about this variant?
Right.
A lot of those people posted to Nintendo Age going back, you know, 15 years. I've been on Nintendo Age for 11 years already. been a member of Nintendo H, posting and discussing things and getting into heated debates and people physically threatening me on the site. It's fun. But anyway, so when people get this news, they have a visceral reaction because, oh my God, now all my data is being bought by a company. It's not a huge company, but it's a company that's going to monetize it
right.
in some way. They're gonna use it to make money. You don't buy something unless you think you're going to make money off of it. And it's a robust database. It absolutely is. It doesn't have every single picture of every game, but there's lots of stuff in there. So if you get that database, you're off and running with whatever venture you want. So the issue, though, is that I'm not sure people have an issue with what happens to like my private messages and the deals I did. That's all in the database. Will that be protected? Will that be used? And people feel slighted because to a lot of the people, the community helped build the website and keep it going over the years. And this is what this guy bought.
Sure.
So not that people ask to be paid, but now that it's gone, where do we stand now? Why do we still have this site if we're just helping someone monetize it?
Right. Yeah, the first administrator response is BA here, and it says, I've been an admin of NA for over 8 years, and this thread is the first I've heard of this news. I can't say I'm happy about the level of communication.
So the conversation I'm going to have now is that, and this is going to get into our next topic, which we're leading up to, is there a need for yet another website to track prices?
I feel like no, there isn't. I feel like especially
there's at least two or three good ones out there.
I mentioned and I said this to my friend Lincoln yesterday. It seems like a weird timing for it too, especially since this is mostly, it's not just, but mostly NES focused, Nintendo in general, but there's a lot of NES focus here, and we're seeing that.
Well, he bought them all though.
Oh, I know, but it just seems like a weird time to buy, given that we already have enough websites like this.
The big ones are Price Charting and was it Video Game Value Now are the two big ones,
right?
That's come up.
So we've got those two, and then we're also entering a slight dip in the interest of retro collecting, mostly NES. But
I don't think it's just slight, but keep going.
NES, Super Nintendo, those are all being replaced now very quickly at this point. I can watch it over the past 2 years in store, being replaced by stuff like GameCube, PS2, original Xbox. We're finally getting to the point where the large majority of people into older games are into systems that came out 20 years ago now, not systems that came out 35, 40 years ago. So it just, the timing of it is kind of strange for me in terms of, I don't know, it's with the amount of stuff that's out there and the timing of it, it seems like an odd purchase to me.
So this is Nintendo age, PlayStation age, Sega age. Atari age is obviously separate.
Right.
Than these. That's the three big ones.
And oh, so it's Sega as well.
There's okay. SegaAge.com as well.
Gotcha.
So there's databases set up for most of these systems into the modern age, the entries. There may not necessarily be like availability for all of them and pictures of the carts and games. For Nintendo and Super Nintendo, you have most of them.
Right.
I haven't looked up N64 and all that. But that's what this guy bought. A healthy database to start from without building it himself. The game collection, I think they're going to probably, he's probably going to keep pieces. He's going to obviously resell chunks of it. You can't keep 10,000 games or whatever the amount of games was. You can't.
Sure.
Even 5,000 games. So make money back on that. Maybe it was a thing, oh, we'll do both at once and get a package deal. You know, or might as well just get rid of, if Dane's thinking, oh, I'll get rid of one, get rid of both. Yeah. Website gone, collection gone. I'm awash with it. I can just focus on my life now.
Yeah.
Which I might do that too at one point. I might just break down and do it. But we're at a point now where with get more to the next topic, but we are now seeing outside ventures come more and more into the retro gaming hobby, and it's accelerated over the past year. And this is just another example of that.
Sure.
Mostly the comic book world, but probably also, if you want to say, trading cards and maybe toys that are getting in now. Yeah. With serious money that want to monetize the interest.
Sure.
But it might be too late.
Well, for a chunk of it. That was my point, was that I feel like for some of this, it's going to be too late. And Dane, you can agree with the decision or disagree. However, if someone were to come to you at the tail end, say, of a hot period in terms of like something that's collectible, you know, this stuff has been on fire. If someone were to come to you at the tail end and be like, here's all this money for it, and you see the writing on the wall, might as well, you know, get some of that money back if you're only in it for the collecting and not the playing and stuff like that, just get rid of it. Get rid of it all when someone makes you that offer.
Sure.
So I understand why he would accept it. I just don't get necessarily why, you know, other people wouldn't know ahead of time, especially admins.
Sure. They're going to be archiving Dane's collection, using it in 1080's website. They'll probably use it to maybe take more pictures to update some things that are missing. For NES games, it's mostly in there. For Super Nintendo games, the chunk's in there, from what I've seen. And it's I'm not saying it's end of the era, but people on the website even admitted in the forums that, yeah, this isn't like the number one source for like rare or weird games anymore. People go on Reddit and report stuff. People post YouTube videos. They go on Twitter. You know, it's not Nintendo Age isn't the place it was
right
6, 7, 8 years ago, where before it all congealed together with all these sources.
Yeah, it doesn't have the cultural impact. Quote,
that's not a knock on it. That's just the reality of the situation.
Nope, times change. Times change. Once a time where TSR's NES Pit was the go-to place for Nintendo news.
I probably read some of Ian's posts back then without realizing it. Like, who's this asshole? Post this now. Allegedly, the form will still be around, which is really the website. It's a form and a database. That's the website. And people, though, are saying what happens to my Patreon post to keep the website going, what happens there and that, because now, you know, you're a corporation, you don't need me to...
yeah, I'm fairly certain that going. Patreon is gone as of next month.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens with our buddy here. So this is a lead into the next topic, Ian.
Yes.
We haven't done an update on the state of retro game collecting in about 3-4 years at least.
Really?
It's been a while.
Has it been that
since
long?
Since we did that, yes.
All right.
That was one of our most popular early videos early on in 2013-14.
Yeah, I do recall that.
So here we are, Ian. It's 2019.
Mm-hmm.
We had the past few years, we had stuff like NES Classic come out, Super Nintendo Classic. We have had a bunch of new systems to keep them alive, the new analog systems, the AVS FPGA systems. We have a lot of successful Kickstarters now and fundraising things for like the Polymega to play old games and like the Atari VCS system was successfully funded on here. Ways to, at least to play retro games. May not necessarily be collecting wholesale, but I think it's related a bit. You can't totally separate retro game collecting from the people that play them. They feed into each other a little bit. But in 2019, we have officially, I think, reached sort of maximum exposure and interest so that we have outside interest now monetizing the hobby. And we spoke about it the last topic with Go Collect, a comic book collecting and pricing site, buying Nintendo Age to beef up and build up a new website, I guess, video game collect. You have WADA partnering with Heritage Auctions and people that from the comic book world getting into buying high-priced rare games like NWCs that show up there. They bought the $100,000 sealed original Super Mario Brothers cart for exposure, obviously. And then you have a lot of people now transferring, not a lot, but people that notice that comic prices, maybe video game prices will beef up the same way. And they're buying sealed games. They're getting them graded and they're going to try and sell them and flip them to a larger extent. So I think there's going to be a shift here. There's going to be a schism that's already happening between two types of game collectors. The people that were the older preservation side bought them before they were valuable or just getting in price. And now the people that notice that it's now a hot thing or was a hot thing getting in to try to beef it up to the next level to say that, okay, there will be a lot of $100,000 video games. There will be, you know, routinely auctions going up where games will sell for tens of thousands of dollars. And I think that's where we're fast approaching that now. And on the tail side, though, I think the general interest in game collecting itself, collecting the cartridges, has been waning. And I'll get your comment on that soon. But from what I looked at for prices on NES, Super Nintendo, N64, They peaked in 2016. I've always said that NES game prices peaked in 2016, and they absolutely have. The way you look at that is you look at the common games that are popular, the games that people are most likely to buy, to play, to hold on to. Games like Contra and DuckTales are not near where they were a few years ago. A lot of the Super Nintendo games are the same way. They've fallen off. And more importantly, the games that had shot up in value, Little Samson, Dinosaur Peak, they stopped. They didn't keep up the same path. They shot up. They plateaued. People got priced out of the market. And I think it was a shell game with people passing games back and forth between each other. And I think that's where we're at. I don't think it's a bubble that's burst, but I think there's been a correction. And you're probably going to talk about shifting interest as well. But it's interesting that, more interesting than the prices softening on some of this, is I think the people have had their thirst quenched, I think, a bit by these NES classics, Super Nintendo classics, where there's been overexposure almost to some of these different systems where, all right, that's enough for me. I don't need to buy the physical game or seek it out. This is enough.
Sure. So there are a couple of things I've noticed that I'd say that slightly different. Not necessarily disagreeing with you, but different things that I've just come across. So one, yes, interest is shifting. I've said it always, and it'll keep being the same. What was new to us or doesn't feel retro to us definitely feels retro to kids who are growing up. Mm-hmm. They get the same sort of feeling exactly that we do, and we may not want to admit it, but these people growing up, their Jak and Daxter or whatever was their Super Mario. It's what they remember. It's where they get the warm fuzzies. It's the games they played with their parents. And Nintendo 64 and PlayStation 1, oddly enough, have always been popular, and they don't seem to be, you know, losing popularity. But Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Genesis has actually ticked up a little bit lately. But Nintendo and Super Nintendo, in terms of collecting, in terms of that being the only thing people ever come into the store for, it's happening a lot less. In terms of prices, I think in a physical retail store, I haven't noticed as big of a change as you might notice when you look at like constant online auctions and stuff. But whereas people will still pay for a popular game that they want to own, no one's looking for those hard to find titles anymore that aren't fun to play. I've had a copy of Supercars sitting in the case at Luna, I think, for $15. And
that's an uncommon game.
Very uncommon game. No one wants it. No one cares. Actually, I think someone finally did buy it, but it sat there for like 2 or 3 months.
In the past, that would have been gone in a week and a half.
Right. That's just not stuff people are looking for anymore. We're back to the point where people just want to buy the stuff they remember. So we started at, you know, it starts with, oh, these are fun, I want to play some of these again. Then people get hardcore about it, and now we're back to the same 50 to 100 games selling. The other thing I noticed is, I think a lot of people got all that energy out with the NES stuff. And I do think that will carry on to future collecting generations, especially as the total game counts grow and things like that. I knew everyone and their mother who was coming into the store when this stuff started to get hot, 2006, 2007. They all wanted complete sets. They all wanted full NES sets. That was the goal. Now, I think a lot of people have learned, and you've mentioned this a little bit when writing the book, there aren't as many people on, say, the Super Nintendo or the Genesis that are looking for rare stuff just because it's rare. There were lots of shitty rare games on the NES, but everyone wanted them still because they were keys to their collection.
Sure.
People don't want that stuff on the Super Nintendo now. No. There's a lot of underground games that have gone up in price. Look at something like Run Saber, but then there's tons of shit that's like impossible to find that no one's paying anything for.
No.
You brought it up, Camel Tree, or it was called On the Ball Here, is a game that I never see anymore, but you can get it for like $15.
Maybe not anymore, as you mentioned. But no, in writing the Super Nintendo book, I'm not astonished, but just generally surprised about, first of all, how many uncommon games there are. There's as many uncommon games as common games on the set. When I'm going through, I'm looking at all these games, I'm like, I've never seen this game before. And then when I looked up some of the prices, it didn't correlate the same way an uncommon game price would correlate with an NES game.
Yeah,
it wasn't close.
We've been trained that uncommon means more money, and then very uncommon means more money.
Not necessarily. Not on the Super Nintendo.
The Super Nintendo people learned, and at this point, it's still a lot of people buying what they would have interest in playing.
So what drives a lot of these prices are completionist collectors like me. There's no reason for Little Samson to cost $900. There's no reason for Dinosaur Pete to cost that much money unless you wanted a complete set. There's no reason for Stamets to cost that much money unless you wanted a complete
but
set.
But now no one wants... It seems like no one really... There's far less people going for complete
sets. But that
sets.
Hasn't carried over to Super.
Right.
To N64 even. To PlayStation. What I always said about those consoles...
Well, 64 does have a few really crappy, expensive games.
But overall...
True. I mean, yeah. The worst ones, what? Stunt Race, Bowling...
Sculptor's Cut,
Worms Armageddon. Worms Armageddon is actually fun.
Yeah. So what I always said about PlayStation collectors and the future collectors is that they won't care about filling rooms. They'll just say, I want this set of stuff. I want all the Atlas games. I want all of these sort of games. And I think that's how it's played out. So the problem with that for people that, but the issue there is that you're now getting to where I think eventually all these sets will return back to is that the vast majority of the game's value will just plummet, and you'll be stuck with either a few weird games worth a lot of money and all the common games that people like and popular ones, and you'll have all the uncommon filler that people won't care about. And I think you're starting to see that now.
You'll still have your very expensive, very rare titles, but we're getting, I think, to the point where it's going to be based on rarity and gameplay. So you could have an expensive, somewhat expensive common title because people want it.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a bunch of inexpensive uncommons or even very uncommons, and then you're going to have the few that meet the criteria of both wanted and very hard to find. And then those will stay at that
level. Which is kind of like how comic books have become.
Yeah.
So comic books...
Well, exactly.
Those Silver Age comics, you know, an Amazing Spider-Man... was a Fantastic Four. That Fantastic Four number 45, you can find it just as much as the 48... The problem is the 48 has the first appearance of Galactus and Silver Surfer, so it's worth like 10 times the amount as that 45 is worth, even though there's the same amount of both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what's going to happen with video games. I really do. And on top of that, though, I think we'll get to the death of physical media. We're going to see how that affects collecting probably 10 years from now, more so than right now. But... you have people that obviously are selling collections. It's not... When I first said this like 2 years ago, people were like, oh, Pat's being an alarmist. Am I?
I don't think it's accelerating as quickly as you think, but it's happening.
But now we're talking about it more and more. We just talked about Dane selling a huge collection off everything. We know people from online that have sold stuff off.
Mm-hmm.
Mutual friends and acquaintances that have sold stuff off. I'm going to sell part of my collections because I'm getting older. I don't have room for a lot of it. And I don't want to deal with it when I'm 60. You know, and I think it's a combination of factors where this is happening. But going back to like these prices, though, I'm looking at Mario Kart 64. According to price charting, it peaked December 2016 at $47. Now it's at $33, and it had just dipped to $25. And I think overall there is a less general interest in acquiring these. Looking at the convention scene, there's a lot less retro gaming conventions that are popping up or trying to pop up now versus 4 years ago. 4 years ago, I'd say, was probably the peak where you had a bunch try for a year or two, and they disappeared.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, three years ago seemed like the year where there was just...
Too many.
A billion. I think I did five, and I could have done, like, eight. And I was like...
And some of them have died because of, there was a bubble, and they burst. There was too many in one area. I think in Texas, there was, at 1 year, there was, like, five of them in 1 year. And only a couple have survived. But some have just shifted away to be general gaming conventions because they realize that the kids coming up, the teenagers, they don't necessarily want to buy this shit.
Well,
they want to experience it to an extent, but they don't need to purchase the items. And so from that perspective, it's not going to carry on to the next generation, the physical ownership.
Sure.
It just won't. No one's going to be more interested in these NES games than me, after me. You know why? Because I'm the one that spent 20 years acquiring them.
Mm.
It's a self-evident sort of fact about it. So, with that said, we have things like the sealed game collecting. People buying the prototypes. They want these one-of-a-kind things. They want to slab these games. They want to sell them. Though that's an interesting offshoot of retro game collecting, but to me, it's something different. That's totally different. That's people that are comic book collectors, toy collectors, that want to invest in a new... They see this as a hot new field to get into, to pump it up to what their comic collection is, their graded comic collections. They think they can do the same. It's just a money play. It's a total money play.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with preservation. It has nothing to do with widening the knowledge of this stuff. That's what has been established by people that have been collecting for the past 25 years. They're the ones that built the databases and found out about the weird variants and shit that existed. Now people say, oh my God, look what you have, this field that's laid out. Let's go in and let's fucking strip mine it. That's the way I see it. But the issue to me there is that, unlike comics, where you can grade anything, with these guys, they're only getting into sealed grading. There's not a huge amount of sealed games out there that you could do for a lot of these games, I think, to maintain the interest. Mm. Does that make sense? Over time, like, there's a reason why we even talk about why complete in box Game Boy collecting never took off. There wasn't enough of them to sustain enough collectors to even build up an interest level.
Yeah, it's too far.
There's just none of them.
To this day, it's still hard to get any good read on a value of a complete in-box Game Boy game. There have been ones, and I can't think of them off the top of my head, but there have been ones that have come in where I'm like, okay, well, I'm sure I can find at least something on this on eBay. No completed transactions for a complete copy of it fucking ever.
Find that Universal Soldier. I don't know how I got mine on a deal. Find that box WCW. You think, oh, WCW, there's no box copies of it.
Yeah.
It's not some weird fucking rare. It was a WCW game. People didn't keep the boxes. So I'm not saying that's going to happen where... I think what these people getting into the... And these aren't video game collectors. This is a total offshoot. Mostly getting into this. They're going to discover that this isn't comic books. That any old fucking sealed game that they got graded doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be worth gold in the future. And that they're going to trade them like hot potatoes between each other. That's what I think is what's going to happen. Because those collectors are the top, you know, 0.1% of video game collectors. Not a lot of people have that money to blow. Or I should probably say to invest on these games. I'm not interested in it. And a lot of people that collect video games aren't interested in sealed games. They're not going to glom onto it. So I think it's always going to exist, but it's just going to be this separate sort of group that's going to be an outlier. It's never going to take off, I think, the way they think it's going to, the way comic books. It's always like, oh, well, if it did it for comic books, it's going to happen with this. It happened for some toys, it's going to happen with this. You can't keep going down that road just because it happened with another group. It's not always the same. It just isn't. But getting back to where we are with stuff that you sell, the stuff I collect, I think at this point, most people, for talking the 90s systems, most people have the shit they want. That makes sense.
Yes.
We have the stuff we want. We've had, if you want to say 2006 as the sort of a point where it shot up, we've had 12 years, 13 years to buy this shit. Even before it really shot up in value the past, you know, 2012, 13, where it really started shooting up more. So at this point, what's left? Is there enough new people to get into this? No. There's not enough new kids that want to buy my Master System collection. There's not going to be a lot of 20-year-olds out there that want to buy my Turbo collection or my Genesis games or my M82 demo unit. There just isn't.
Well, I mean, you'll have more luck with Genesis, Nintendo, and Super Nintendo. But yeah, the
I'm talking about overall, though.
The specifically tiny collections, I'd see those dropping at some point. A Master System was hot for a minute because everyone who finished their NES collection went for it, but... Does anyone talk about it? Does anyone play it? Does anyone do anything with it?
I mean, I got an awesome bitmap books Master System book, but
I like the Master System.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, a lot of this collection was just fed by the desire to buy more.
Yes.
The Master System's got good stuff on it, yes. But it's not something that people even that 2 years where people were collecting it, it didn't give it any face time. Honestly, it didn't really bring in any new fans of the Master System, and I can see other stuff like this. All it did was serve to pump up the prices for a little bit, and then everyone walked away.
The Fantastic Four, here's an analog to comics. The Fantastic Four was like Marvel's most popular comic book for like 25 years. No one talks about Fantastic Four now. Interest can die off. Even if something was cool and popular, you give it enough time, people don't talk about it anymore. because it's just the natural way. It's just the way things work.
Yeah.
That makes me sad about Fantastic Four, but it's going to come back with the movie. It's going to get its day. Sorry. So that's all I'm going to say about this is that prices have retracted on systems. Yes, probably, Ian. There's some systems that'll probably go up with the timing. Has Saturn gone up?
Saturn is insanely high. Saturn is...
But that's like Turbo, though. There's not a lot of games. Not a quantity of games.
Saturn's available. Fucking through the roof. And the timing on it is about right, too.
I think we always talk about stuff like TurboGrafx, where it's like those always probably remain somewhat valuable because there isn't any of them. You can't find them.
Saturn, Dreamcast, Turbo. There's always going to be some inherent value there, I think, because of...
I'm looking up Snatcher. Reality. Snatcher stayed the same price the past few years, about.
Snatcher's one of those games that rarely wavers.
$400. It peaked. You know where it peaked? It peaked May 2018 at 200 at 455. Now it's at 400.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's what I would assume.
Let me look up a Bonk's Adventure, a quote unquote common TurboGrafx game. That to me would be interesting to see what that has done. Yeah, so that is not at the highest it's been. That's gone up and down a little bit. That's at $33. It looks like that's also where it was. It was at 36 in 2016. It was at 35 in 2017. It dipped back around. So that's been about the same it's been for the past 3 years, 3 to 4 years.
Yeah.
They haven't come up. They've plateaued. They've reached sort of a mark and they've plateaued. I just think it's interesting.
I've seen a lot of smaller stuff where like a price will go up and then it will just plateau. Sapphire for years was 500 on average. And that may still be it, but I recently saw a couple of them sell for like, I think it was like 750 and then 850. So, but I think regardless of that, it's not the change in price I want to bring up. It's the fact that with smaller niche collections, the prices can get really expensive, but they don't tend to fly up.
You also get to the part where people that know the value of it won't let it go for a deal. They'll hold on to it for years and years.
Sure.
And that can happen with a game like a Sapphire or Magical Chase where it's like, yeah, you know, there might be three people interested only in it. So I know that, you know, you have to buy it for me. So I'm not going to give you even a $500 discount. I want $5,000.
Oh, there are games that used to sit on eBay. Like there was a Corey Yoon up on eBay that sat there, I think at $450 for at least 2 years, 3 years. And I think I realized it sold a couple months ago for $400, meaning that it took 3 years for them to drop it $50 and then it sold. So yeah, they can hold on.
A lot of ins, a lot of outs. So I think we definitely seen, I think, the peak in terms of, I think, craze to acquire this stuff. I think obviously some people are selling off their stuff and that affects prices. Not saying that it's totally affected these softening prices. There's not enough of it. For the rare stuff, you would see it if like, you know, six or seven people sold all at once. But I expect the plateau is going to continue. I expect more of the common stuff to gradually lessen and lessen. But like I said, even the uncommon stuff, I was shocked. Well, with the Super Nintendo prices, I was like, this is interesting to me. Very interesting. So Ian, 5 years from now, where do you think we're going to be? Do you think we're going to be at a people just buying PS3 stuff or just PS2 stuff and just focusing on that?
No, I think we'll always have people who are buying for the other systems. But like I said, I think it's going to go from I want a Nintendo and everything to I want a Nintendo, Mario 3.
Like five games.
Zelda, yeah, Kirby, and I'm done.
Will they even want an original NES anymore?
Honestly, we don't sell many original NESs anymore. Ever since the HD Retrons came out, Retron HDs. I mean, snobs don't like them, but they're totally serviceable for what they are. For the average person who's playing these games, they sell like crazy. So I'm still selling tons of those. But honestly, no, I don't think anyone wants original NESs anymore. And the thing is, I don't want to sell original NESs anymore.
They're a pain in the ass.
They're a fucking pain in the ass. Like, I'll have a guy come back 3 times. It's not working. Yes, it is. You're seeing it right here. Well, it's not working at home. I don't know what to tell you, man. But there's too many variables in, you know, with an NES. You know, it's old. What part of it's dirty? Is your cartridge dirty? So, they're a pain in the ass to sell. And people don't want them anymore because everyone's got an HD TV. And only people who have, like, CRTs really want an original NES at this point.
Real quick, Earthbound check. Because we always use Earthbound as a sort of point. So, Earthbound, remember when it was over $200 for a while? Around $200, like, 5 years ago? Mm-hmm. It dipped down. It looks like it dipped down to $130 last year, January last year. Now it came back up to about 180, 164.
Yeah, I think we sell it for like, I think we have it for 160.
Remember, was that 250 for a bit or 220? Remember that for a hot minute?
We never had it over 200 because people kept saying that. People kept saying that, but when I'd look, I wouldn't see those selling for over
200. I think it was like Amazon sales or some people would tell me.
It was always at like 200 for a long, long time, and then it dropped to 180, and I know it dropped lower, and now it came back up.
So, all right, so it's not woe is me, but there's definitely been a softening. There's been a retraction. There's been people getting out for sure because people get older. That's just the way it works here. And we'll see where it shifts a few years from now. But the fervor has definitely been done. Gone are the days where you have five or six different vendors at the swap meet with their own little game store. That's fucking done, over. That will probably never return.
So I don't have one this week.
What?
A Tails.
You don't have the
this one was really short, and I barely remember it because it was from 2 weeks ago.
Oh, why don't you try telling it?
No, I'm not forcing the tail.
There was no other Tails from the game store?
Not this week.
We can't run the intro?
Nope, sorry.
Such a disappointment.
I really have to be firm in my beliefs on this segment.
God, now it's like every other week.
I'm not doing it if it ain't good.
Wow, okay.
I ain't doing it if it ain't good.
Okay. I guess we're going to go to a Patreon.
You go to patreon.com/CU podcast.
For what, Ian? What do you get there, Ian?
You get various tchotchkes and gugos.
No, you don't get tchotchkes. We don't mail you stuff.
you get audio tchotchkes and visual gugos. You can get the full podcast. You can get writing. You can get a hangout. You can be part of a poll. Part of a community. Grow the community. You can partake in a weekly poll.
Are there any embeds?
I don't know. Have you embedded anything? Embed in their mind what a great value our Patreon
the
is.
The value. Okay, so we had a Patreon poll topic. This was a tight race.
Yeah?
Pulled away at the end.
What do we got?
In third place, is backwards compatibility a key feature for the next gen of consoles? 60%. No one cares about us talking about that crap. Is it a key feature? It'd be nice. Second place. This is the smallest between first and second ever. Second place. Would Pat have collected NES games with today's prices? 41%. In first place, 43%.
Are you suncoasting it today?
Pat's terrible Suncoast working experience.
Well, I can just kick back for this.
All right, Ian. Picture it. Sicily. 1934. No, that's Golden Girls reference. This is 2000, the year after my ACL surgery. Young plucky Pat comes back from college, 1 year older, 1 year wiser.
You were plucky when you were younger.
Might have lost his virginity the year before. We don't know.
Anyway, do I want to know this?
I'm just saying. I'm painting the picture. Okay. But I decide to apply for jobs.
Yes.
And I had worked at an awful supermarket, and that was probably the worst job I had up to that point.
What
did
you do there?
Oh, when you were a guy back then, you did everything. Now they don't allow you to do stock. They have people come in special for stock. Cashier, stock, carts outside, milk guy, and dairy guy rotating the...
Really? Stock isn't done by grocery store employees anymore?
Not anymore. I think they specialize it with a different crew.
Huh, interesting.
What else did I do? Oh, the fruits and veggies I did every once in a while. I did everything. I was the utility player, getting paid $5.15 an hour doing all that stuff.
$5.15. Big fucking money. I'd love to work in the produce section. Anyways.
Yeah, great. Anyway, the guy who worked there was a dick. He used to make fun of me or try to. Anyway. So, Suncoast came about because I had applied to Funko Land. They never got back to me. Sons of bitches. That was my dream job, Funko Land. Applied to Funko Land. I applied to Toys R Us, which had a psychological survey test. Like, it was like, oh, do you ever steal anything? It was like, oh, should I answer truthfully or not truthfully? You know, it's one of those sort of things. Toys R Us didn't get back to me either for some reason. I would have been a great Toys R Us employee. Could have kept the smock. So I thought about the mall. I thought about the movie theater. I don't think I remember applying to the movie theater, but that would have been a great job. I should have done that. I don't think I applied in the movie theater.
There's people who listen to us who occasionally talk to me about like how they work at the movie theater and whatnot. It actually sounds like, I mean...
Sounds fun.
Sounds fun enough, yeah.
But I did the next best thing. Right next to, inside the mall, was a movie theater, and then you had Suncoast Movie Motion Picture Company mm-hmm. down there. Now, Suncoast, boys and girls, they still exist. There's about 10 left in the U.S.
Really?
But they used to have about 150 throughout the U.S. in malls. And they sold movies to you. Movies. VHS and DVDs.
It's very sad that Suncoast doesn't bring up the store anymore is the first
thing. No, it's not sad. Fuck Suncoast.
It brings up Suncoast Credit Union.
So I applied. I got the job for whatever, $5.15, $5.25 an hour. I remember the first day at the mall. Remember, my shaky knee, I put on about 30 pounds in the past year because of my knee. Just starting to rehab, get better. Was this right after my knee surgery? This is a year after my knee surgery. That's right. So anyway, so I apply. I get the job. The first time I watched a fucking video, like an intro video in the little back office area that was so small. And I'm like, okay, be friendly, push their movie club membership that they had. You know, you spent whatever, $5 a month or whatever, and you get 10% off one of those sort of deals. So I start, and then at the first, I thought, this is fine. You watch videos. But the people I worked with were ran it like it was a real job. Like, this was a strict job. Where this is serious. You're selling VHS tapes. Remember, this is like 2000. There's still mostly VHS tapes with, you know, there's maybe like a couple hundred DVDs in existence. DVDs were just getting off the ground then. Remember, the Fight Club was a big one. That had a lot of
I've got
bonus
that
features.
One. Yeah.
That was an early DVD. That was early.
Yeah, I've got that. And the 7 DVD is equally like impressive when you open it.
DVDs started like 99, I think, or 98. Like, that was like when DVDs started.
99, and I bought mine I bought my DVD player in 2000 from Sears, and I went to Suncoast and bought all of the Cowboy Bebop DVDs.
So these are my superiors at Suncoast. I don't have memories of the people that worked alongside me. They were pretty quiet and chill. There was three people that were my superiors. You had this redheaded, about 21-year-old that I think worked at her family's bar on the side, and she was not pleasant. She was bossy. She had the big ring of keys. I'd close with her on a Friday or Saturday night. You had the cool dude, made a little past his prime, working in the mall. You know, he's probably like 25, 26. He always bragged about his car. He was a manager. You know, he was a guy who worked at Suncoast for like 4 or 5 years. He built himself up. You already get the image of him. He was okay, a little douchey. And then you had the 17-year-old who was somehow my manager, somehow working with money even though she was underage, and I'll get into her more in a second. So Suncoast days consisted of the following. Waiting for people to come into Suncoast, because for most of the days during the week, no one walks in the mall at 10 a.m. or 11 a.m. or 12. People don't come till the afternoon or evening. So those were the cool shifts. If you had the first shift, like 10 to 4, that was easy. Versus you didn't want the Friday or Saturday night, you know, 4 to
10 to 10 4, there was
whatever.
Probably nothing to do but
or 3 to 9, whatever it was. So they would be playing some children's educational or children's programming on their TVs, no HDTVs yet, and your days would be consisted of reorganizing and realphabetizing VHS sections. The issue, Ian, is that there's not a huge amount of different genres. So you do maybe 2 or 3 in a day. You'd expect those VHSs to be mostly in the same place 2 days later when you came back to work, 3 days later.
But no,
because the redheaded superior of mine thought it would be cute to keep me busy by testing me to rearrange, I don't know, say the sci-fi fantasy section, and have me reorganize and realphabetize it, knowing full well I'd done it a few days before. And to test me, she would take one or two videos out and change the place. So say that Planet of the Apes tape was in the D section today, when I had just put it back there the week before. And total busy work, so you're not just doing nothing. But I was making $5.15 an hour driving to the mall to do this. It was within my right to just do nothing at Suncoast Motion Picture Company. And
of
so,
which there are 7 of, by
there
the way.
There are 7
I,
now.
I just looked. I've actually got the locations.
That's karma. So She would be bossy. She would say, you know, we need to fill up whatever popular VHS or DVD. Okay, put some more out. Okay, sure. I understand filling stock. That's fine.
Yeah.
But to force someone to reorganize and realphabetize a section they had just literally done a few days before, and not ones that might be out of place, which you could find, but she would say, oh, she would check the specific one that she took out and did. It's Suncoast, man. It's at the mall. I need petty cash to pay for my freaking Geo Prism. I need gas for my Geo Prism. Come on. Help me out. I'm 20-year-old Pat coming off a knee surgery here. They would force you, I mean really force you, to push their membership program.
Oh, I heard that was real bad.
I mean, like, they would, like, look over your shoulder if you didn't do, would you like to be a member of the motion picture thing, blah, blah, blah. And I think there wasn't a credit card. It was just a card, a membership card.
2000 seems to be a big year for that sort of stuff, because that's when my one buddy worked at GameStop, and you lived or died based on your subscriptions.
Yeah. So push that. I'm like, okay. And then I would be pretty good. I'd push it, like, halftime. I would try to read the person and see if they're friendly. Yeah, if they were mean-looking, I didn't want to push it.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, you get surprised, but they would sit over your shoulder. The managers, the trio, there would be one or two of them there at the same time with an underling that they could boss around, like me. And they would just look over your shoulder and be like, oh, you didn't, why didn't you push it? Oh, I don't know, next person. I didn't get a cut of pushing. I didn't get a cut. I didn't get a cut of the store profits.
Yeah, it's not convincing.
The managers did. They got a cut of the store profit, I believe, on some level. I didn't. So fuck you for making me push something to these people that just want to buy their freaking, I don't know, Forrest Gump VHS tape and get out. Or their Fight Club DVD. The amount of theft shrink that went on in a store was nuts. So the best thing that people did was... I think there were video cameras. I would see people literally walk over, scary looking dudes, walk over to the shelf and pick something up and say, I want to return this. And you were told not to get in their way. Let them basically steal free credit.
Oh my God.
Not to cause trouble. And I'm thinking about, you want me to push these fucking memberships to make money. You're losing money by literally giving away credit to people that I could see take shit off the shelf. And you know that the reason why they keep doing it is because they haven't been stopped before. Because they're afraid of getting sued.
They don't want to get into the legal aspect.
But if people don't have a receipt, for me, it was like, So I was like, all right, fine. Here's your fucking store credit. Get out. You know, even though I saw, you know, some scary looking dudes pick up like children's anime sets or whatever and then plop. And I'm like, I know you didn't buy that. Like, come on. So the days were boring and they went on and on and on. It was, what was the big children's program in the early 2000s? The worm, what the fuck was it called? What was, I don't know. Blue's Clues?
Blue's Clues!
And the fucking worm thing.
Scotty Too Hotty?
What was the fucking worm children's thing? What the fuck was it called? I forget. I forget. But all right. So it gets worse though. So they had a strict dress code. You had to wear solid black shirts. Okay.
And black pants, too, if I remember correctly.
I think you could have wore khaki pants.
Oh, okay.
But, or wait a minute. Maybe I'm forgetting that. But you definitely had to have a black shirt
on. Sure.
They didn't have like a Suncoast shirt for you.
Right. It was just a black polo, whatever. Yeah.
So one time, it was like a dark gray one I came in with. Now, the mall was like a 20-minute drive for me. Mm-hmm. I show up, and it wasn't like a warning or anything. The redhead sent me back home. Put on a proper black shirt. Nice. Like I couldn't skate with it. My fucking 4-hour shift where I'm literally be pocketing $20. You can't let me work in a dark gray shirt. You can't do that. You're gonna cut my balls off in front of the other employee. Okay, cut my balls off. Do that. So I go home and I do that. That was a fun time. But probably the most uncomfortable was the 17-year-old, just because the 17-year-old, I think, took a fancy to me and would comment on sometimes my tight shirts. And the reason it was creepy and not cool, sexual harassment is what's there between sexual harassment and flirting. You don't like it. Not just that. She was totally unattractive. She was underage, too. she was the daughter of my fourth grade teacher.
Oh.
So, and she kind of looked like my fourth grade teacher because, you know, the daughter. So it was not a pleasant experience to have comments made about me with all that thrown together when I'm making $5.15 an hour at Suncoast at the mall. It just wasn't cool.
A true, true salary.
It wasn't cool. It wasn't cool at all. So it didn't happen all the time. It just happened like once a week. And she had the keys to all the money, though. But she was 17. That was not legal, Suncoast. You had to be 18 to handle the money and count it. I don't understand how you got away with that. She might have been only 16, actually, now I think about it. But anyway, so Suncoast blew. It was the worst job I ever had, worse than the supermarket. You know what the best job was? Working at the library at college. That was a cool job.
Yeah.
It actually paid decent.
I've always thought librarian sounds like a great job, but I actually have a few friends who are librarians, and they all say it can be real fucking rough.
Oh. So this is how the story ends. It ends with me going back to college, and, you know, and I think they wanted me to give 2 weeks notice. Like, it's like, fuck you, I'm making $5.15 an hour at a mall job. I'll give you a day's notice. But they did take away hours a couple times for me. Not that the money was huge, but it's like, you want spending money. And then, I'll never forget this, they had the fucking balls, Ian. When I came back that December, when I came back from my nice college break, they had the fucking balls 5 months later, 4 months later, to call me up, ask me if I wanted to come into work during the busiest time of year at the mall at Suncoast. And they called me up as if I was going to say yes. Like, oh yeah, I'll come in and work for 5.15 hours. After I had a horrible time, I basically hung up the phone. So did that do that justice? That was my terrible Suncoast working experience.
Yeah, that sounds miserable.
It was miserable. You take one of those factors out, it was just bad. You throw them all together, it was miserable. I think you did get a 10% or 15% discount, employee discount. They had some weekends where you got like 25% off, or they had like a special thing like that.
Mm.
So VHS tapes. Didn't have a DVD player yet, so I couldn't buy those. So, yeah, that was my Suncoast experience.
All right. Now, visit a Suncoast in Dayton, Eastern North Carolina, Eastern Texas, New York City area, Omaha, Portland and North. That's at the Lloyd.
We're going to Suncoast at the Lloyd.
We can go visit Suncoast at the Lloyd this year. And then Southwest Ohio.
Wow. So none of New Jersey is one in the New York City area? That could be Northern New Jersey.
New York City, Monmouth Mall.
That's Northern New Jersey.
Eatontown, New Jersey.
Okay, so yeah. Not my mall, but okay. I hope that dude with this cool Trans Am already had, who was like, yeah, I'm pulling in 30 a year working at Suncoast as a manager or regional manager, where the fuck he was.
People like that, they do good for the rest of their lives.
Oh, yeah, they're not just, you know, living in a shit house now with a wife that they don't love and 8 kids. Okay. Is that it? You want to do a Q&A, Ian?
No, that's it.
How long have we been recording here? I don't even know.
2 hours.
Been 2 hours. We had a couple long segments.
Yeah,
I guess
it's been a good one.
It's been a good one. We're gonna be at Long Island. Long Island, baby. Strong Island, Ian.
That's right. I'm excited about it. That's August 10th and 11th, and I'm very much looking forward to it. Come out and see Patrick and I, but also come out and see the wonderful Frank Cifaldi. Who else is going to be there?
I think you had the website.
I'm sorry. My Life in Gaming with Corey and Try. Hit me with some others.
Go to expo.liretro.com, Ian.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have guest speakers, cosplay, museum, musical guests.
Vinny Vinesauce, I think, is one of them.
He's local. It would, don't want to say. You're going to have Leonard Herman there from Jersey.
That's right, Leonard.
You're going to have the Modern Vintage Gamer. You're going to have Retronauts and Vinny, my pal Vinny from Vinesauce, will be there.
I felt like that was safe. I'm pretty sure you had mentioned that later.
He's within driving. He's in Staten Island. It's not too far away. And then I'll be at Missouri Game Con the week before that.
We're going to have a lot of cool folks there. So it's going to be
A lot of cool folk. Maybe we might go to a convention in November. We'll see about that.
We'll see about that one.
I'll be at the Missouri Game Con at mlgamecon.com at Saturday, August 3rd. I'll also be at Too Many Games as someone tries to call me. A lot more weird calls lately. Too Many Games. Stop it. Too Many Games is June 21st to 23rd. Go to toomanygames.com for more information there. And then, a certain SNES guidebook. You can pre-order it at ultimatesnes.com. I'm starving, Ian. I'm going to have a Flex Pro meal.
Are you?
We gonna do some streaming a little quick after this?
No, I have to go home and clean.
Clean?
Yeah, the place is a mess.
I wouldn't know. I wasn't there.
But you were invited.
I was halfway invited. Come have a beer, I think Ian said.
Because at that point, you had already said, essentially, you weren't coming over. The day before, I said, hey, we have people coming over. I will let you know. Just come over.
You said 3 o'clock.
Yes.
Then I texted you at 3.
Yes.
And you said that no one's here yet. I just
yeah, you said
lunch.
If people were grilling yet. And I said, no, probably in about an hour or two. You were invited.
I'm just
you
annoyed.
Skated your stuff
honestly,
away.
I just wanted to see Thomas, and you didn't let me know Thomas was here. I'm annoyed.
You would have known if you came over.
I'll
like
take
you
it
said
up.
You
oh,
yeah,
okay, so surprised that a guy from L.A. might be at your place.
He's not in L.A. He comes down a lot.
Where is he? At? Not L.A.?
No.
Where is he?
I mean, he's not close, but he's not
Riverside?
In LA.
Orange County?
I think like Orange County-ish. He's like 2 hours away. Hour
2 hours is L.A.
Well,
hour and a half.
Half
is like Anaheim. Maybe like Anaheim-ish? Oceanside's like 50 minutes. All right, that's it. We're doing a podcast, right? Is it done?
It's done.
All right, we're done.
It's finished.
We'll see you next time.
Fini.